Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, known as not the 12th Hour. And I live in Hill, Texas. Today is June 13, 2013. It is the fifth day of the fourth month, 2017. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, My Yah and I Go in the Field Together. Yah and I go in the field together. We walk and talk as good friends should and do. We cast for a hand, our voices ring with laughter. My Yah and I walk through the meadows here. We clasp our hands, our voices ring to laughter. As Yah and I walk through the meadows here. He tells me of the years that went before me, when heavenly plans were made for me to be. And all the love a dream of deep conception to come to life as bird and glory see. And all was but a dream of dim conception to come to life as bird and glory see. Yah and I will go for our together. We'll walk and talk, and just as good friends do. This earth will pass, and with it come and trifle. But Yah and I will go on ending. This earth will pass, and with its common trifle, but Yah and I will go on endlessly. Two Women Competing, Part 4 of Shepherd God, Volume 1, page 227. We're going to continue on now with the New Testament, Section 1. As Isaac was the firstborn after spirit, naturally he must represent the first section, beginning at the cross of the Yahshua. Quoting the words of Paul, he says, "Now we brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of the promise." Galatians 4:28. Isaac then represents that section from the cross to 1844. Okay, now, we have new light here looming on the horizon. Remember, we're dealing with type and antitype. Now, the type was when Isaac was born unto Sarah by the Spirit. Ishmael being the firstborn in that family, okay, by the Egyptian mother Hagar. Now, Ishmael and Hagar represents Mount Sinai, Saudi Arabia, in the south. That's their Mount Zion, in the south at Mount Horeb, where Moses brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, and that's the first stop he made. He brought them to Mount Horeb, to Mount Sinai, where heaven came down with the sanctuary on the top of Mount Sinai. This is where Moses went into the mount for 40 days. Okay, now, we know he came down from the mount and he found them apostatizing, partying, cavorting, even his own prophet brother, Aaron, is cooperating with them in their apostasy by making this golden calf for them. Now, this represented Mount Sinai's sojourn and their part of the type. So Moses was allotted 40 days in the mount to teach Mount Sinai, the people of the inhabitants of Mount Sinai, the Ishmaelites. You know, these are Ishmaelites, believe it or not, mixed with Hebrew Israelites coming out of Egypt. But it was the Ishmaelites that led in the apostasy and the rebellion at Kadesh Barnea. So Moses' first 40 days in the mount was for Mount Sinai for the Ishmaelites and Hagar. And so Yahweh gave them the law, the same law that he gave at Mount Zion in Jerusalem for the Isaacites. Now our type is, and our allegory is Mount Sinai for the Ishmaelites, for Hagar, for the Jews of the flesh of the Old Testament. All they get is Mount Sinai. They don't get Jerusalem for their headquarters. So Moses then broke the Ten Commandments at the end of the 40 days. He came down and found them cavorting around, apostatizing. And he breaks the Ten Commandments, and Yahweh says, you hew out two stones, and you bring them up here again and spend another 40 days. So Moses goes up in the mount, and he spends another 40 days with a new set of Ten Commandments. He broke the one because of Mount Sinai and the Ishmaelites. He broke the commandments for them. But Yahweh made him hew out two tables of stone, and then he brought him up, and Yahweh wrote on again the Ten Commandments. Now this is for Mount Zion at Jerusalem, these Ten Commandments, and these are for the Isaacites of the New Testament. So you had 40 days, Moses being taught the law on the mount, Yahweh, for the Ishmaelites, for the Egyptians that had co-mingled with the Hebrewites coming out of Egypt. Remember the story? That when they were told to put the blood upon the doorpost, and all of those that got in behind those doorposts were allowed to come out of Egypt. And many Egyptians joined the Hebrew children and come and got in behind their doorposts and were covered by the blood that is dedicated for the house of Israel and not for the house of Ishmael. That blood was put on the doorpost of the Hebrews, not the Egyptian. If they wanted to be protected and delivered by that blood, they had to come and join the Hebrews and get in behind their doors. Because in Egypt, exclusively alone, there wasn't one of them put their blood upon their doorpost. And so when the death angel passed over that night, there was not an inhabitant in Egypt that didn't have a death of the firstborn among man and beast. So it showed that those Egyptians that absconded and got in behind the doors of the Hebrews with the where the blood was, they were the ones that were delivered into the wilderness. And they're the ones that caused the first trouble of rebellion when they got into the wilderness. So the first 40 days in the mount was for Mount Sinai, for the Old Testament that the Egyptians were in charge of. New Testament, Moses had to go up, spend another 40 days, and now it's dedicated for the New Testament, and so now this is where we're at right now. Now, the New Testament is fulfilling the antitype of the type. The type was Ishmael and Isaac born unto Abraham and Sarah and Hagar. That was your type. Your antitype was when the church is born with the disciples representing the Isaac, the church of the free church in heaven, Jerusalem at Mount Zion at Jerusalem. So now we come down to our day, and Adventist Church comes out of the Dark Ages, and they're born again, the spiritual Israel. And here you have the same old thing all over again. You have Hagar and the Ishmaelites, with Ishmael being born in the Adventist Church. You have Sarah and Isaac again delivering here in the Adventist Church. Well, it just so happens that again Hagar and Ishmael had their run from 1844 up to 1970, fulfilling the antitype of Ishmael and Hagar. That was before the cross. But we're dealing with antitype now. We're not dealing with type anymore. But nevertheless, you have to have the two families played out again in the antitype. So, and when Brother Johnson started his new movement, or his third step is in the movement of the Seventh-day Adventist, he represented the Isaac branch. Okay, now, so Isaac in the message shows up in the antitype in 1970. And he's the one that gives the birth to the two spiritual twin brothers, Esau and Jacob, Brothers Johnson and Denton Brunken. So now, the antitypical Isaacs are born. But they had to spend 30 years together before they could be qualified then to be the leaders and progenitors of the righteous line to raise up the 12 tribes of Israel. And they had to prove themselves for 30 years. So by the year 2000, 1999, the voice spoke to Brother Johnson at the Solemn Assembly of that year. And then 1999 is closing out 30 years now that we were together. And he says, sanctify the congregation. He says, lock the doors at 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the morning on the Solemn Assembly, the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles in the seventh month. And so he called everybody, his family, his sons and his grandsons and their families, and he said, be sure you be there before 9 o'clock. I'm locking the door at 9 o'clock in the morning. And they said, well, sound like you're trying to run everybody off. Said Daniel, his ordained associate pastor, responds to his father, sounds like you're trying to run everybody off. Well, I don't think I'll be there. So he didn't come. Now, if Rodas hadn't called him and told him anything, he would have showed up. Maybe not at 9 o'clock, but he'd have showed up for morning of worship. But because Rodas, I give him that special message, he said, well, it sounds like you're trying to run everybody off. I think I'll just stay home. And he did. Well, we had his son, Daniel's son, had to stay home, Rodney. Okay, Rodney was assistant to Daniel, and Daniel was assistant to his father. They both stayed home. Well, that afternoon, when it came time for the second meeting in the afternoon at the ninth hour, and Brother Johnson was commanded to lock the doors at that ninth hour of the day. Well, Amy DeLong, Alan's wife, calls Daniel and Rebecca and says, y'all better get over here. So there's something going on here, and it's y'all need to be in on. And so that's what alarmed Daniel and his son, Rodney, to come to church that day. Now this is a holy day, a high holy day. And all the members of Gilead Center, they were very punctual in keeping holy days all through the year. That's one thing, that because they was following the letter of the law, and they didn't know how to follow the spirit of the law, but they knew how to follow the letter of the law. And boy, they were careful. And they call it their righteousness. But here it is, because Daniel got alarmed, and Rodney, thinking that there's going to be some kind of a commotion going on in church today, I just think we'll stay home, just leave it alone. So, sure enough, that was Yahweh sanctifying the congregation and separating Esau from Jacob. And took Esau from Jacob. So I promptly told Brother Stephen Johnson when the solemn assembly day was over, I said, well, you know, your son and your grandson was cut off from the congregation. They didn't obey the command if they could be here. You gave them a direct command, and they disobeyed it. They cut off. Well, it upset Brother Johnson to no end that I told him that his family was cut off. And I said, and you didn't lock the doors at 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock like you said you were going to do. Because he's waiting for them to show up. And you just went right on past the hours. Didn't lock the doors. And I told him, I said, and you're held responsible too. And I said, in essence, you were cut off too. And I said, until you repent and tell your family to repent, your son and grandson, and make it right. But he never did. One day we were working together, and he says, let's talk about Solomon Assembly. What happened? Do you still think my son was cut off? I said, absolutely. He said, well, he's still coming to church. He's still occupying the rostrum up there. He's still my assistant. I said, that's all because you don't sit him down. And he said, boy, he didn't know what to say. So anyway, Brother Johnson and I had an ongoing conflict then for the next 3.5 years. And that is fitting because that finished out Brother Johnson's tenure, 3.5 more years. He wrote in that letter he excommunicated me with. He says, my tenure and my commission reached from 1970 up to 2000, Solomon Assembly up to 2002. And he said, filling out 33.5 years, the time I started my ministry, it came to 33.5 years. Okay? So, Willis Johnson and our conflict then began after 30 years together. And that's when we started separating our ways, and finally we were permanently separated in 2003. I thought it was very important for you all to know that, because the antitypical Isaac and Ishmael showed up in 1970, and the Adventist Church is the one that gave birth to the spiritual twin brothers Esau and Jacob. So now, and incidentally, Brother Johnson ended up being in charge of the candlestick called the Angel of Laodicea, Revelation 3:14. So antitypical Esau was the last angel to occupy that candlestick of Laodicea, 70 Advent. Okay? So now it says, Galatians 4:28, Isaac then represents that section from the cross to 1844. Okay? So, and he also represents the antitypical from 1970 and clear to the 11th hour. Isaac took his place at the beginning, at the top of the 11th hour, 1970. And the Isaac church was born, and with his son Jacob, the second born, inheriting the birthright in 2003. And now the Isaac church is in charge. From here on to the 12th hour, this Isaac church, with giving birth to the David, the kingdom of David, then is the one that is going to carry and lead the way through the harvest of the world clear to the end of time. Alright, now here it is. It says, then represents that section from the cross to 1844 as there has been no other call before. For the commencement of each previous section as well as their completion was marked by an important event. Just so with the termination of the section represented by Isaac 1844, well, that was not the termination. 1844 did not terminate Isaac. 1844 gave birth to the spiritual Israel of the day that was to fill out all, that was to bring to fulfillment all the allegories, all the antitypes, all of anything that has to do with interpreting symbols and in the way of interpreting prophecy, for the first time. So it just so happened that Isaac and given birth to Antipater, Esau, and Jacob in 1970 shows where he took his part in the antitype and his position in the Adventist Church for the antitype. It is the only fitting time for that section to pass away and usher in the second, at which time the judgment in the heavenly sanctuary began. Evidently, the scroll had to make a turn and again type metanotype. Now, you realize what I just read? Exactly what I've been saying. We'll read again. 1844 is the only fitting time for that section to pass away and usher in the second, at which time the judgment in the heavenly sanctuary began. That's the judgment of the living in our day. So when the judgment of the living began, it was announced in 1970, the sanctuary was put into full operation, and the house of Esau practiced the judgment of the living for 32 years that I was with them. Evidently, the scroll had to take a turn, and again, type met antitype. Okay, so the scroll took another turn in 1970, and then you had the Esau and the Jacobites, you had the King Saul and the Davidites, you had the Ishmaels, and you had the Isaacs played out, and you had the two prophets of 1 Kings 13 that played out in the allegory of the old line prophet from the north, and the true prophet of the king of Judah from the south. Okay, so now you had about five different allegories play out there from 1970 to 2003. Jacob, being the son of Isaac, naturally comes next in line. Jacob, then, is the symbol of the second section after Yahshua. Okay, so now Yahshua spiritually was born in 1970 as well. Okay, because of Isaac giving birth to Esau and Jacob, Isaac was a type of Christ, Yahshua. He was a symbol of Yahshua. When Abraham took his son Isaac upon the mount to offer him up for a sacrifice, his only son, only begotten son of the Spirit, and he said, well, I have to obey. Yahweh has the power to raise him up if he needs to. And so he said, Abraham, whenever the angel told him, withhold his hand and don't slay Isaac, he saw one of the days of the son of Yahweh, meaning that he was a symbol of Yahshua. He saw one of the days of the sons of Yahshua, the son of Yahweh. And so he was a symbol and a type. And so Isaac was spiritually born again. Yahshua was spiritually born in 1970. So it says that the aim of the church since that time, since 1844, has been to make the 144,000. As Jacob was the father of the 12 tribes of Israel, the type, just so he is a father in the type of the antitype. Okay. The 144,000, the true, the section represented by the Jacob, is the only fitting symbolical period to give birth unto the 144,000. As soon as this number is made and sealed, this particular section is to pass away and usher in the next. Okay. So now, as soon as this 144,000 is sealed, as soon as this number is made and sealed, this particular section is to pass away and usher in the next. All right. When did the closing work for the Adventist Church take place, 2002, closing out the judgment of the dead. So that section passed away. Now the second phase of the judgment of the living, picked up where the judgment of the dead ended, 2002. So it says, and the first thing that takes place in Ezekiel 9, the angel going, man of the writer's inkhorn, Yahshua, man in linen, going to the city marking all those assigned accounts of abomination. Well, there's your seed of the 144,000 right there, taking place in the book put in the heaven. That has to be at least a 7-year period. And so that started, no doubt, technically, that started at 2003. Okay? 2010 should end the seed of 144,000. They should be already in a bookwork in heaven, sealed and set aside. Okay? So, because it says that this particular section is to pass away and usher in the next. As there was an important event with each succeeding section at the close of the one and beginning of the other, there must be something of no lesser consequence that would make the change of this section with which we have identified ourselves. That important event is none other than the purification of the mountain of the house of the Yahweh, Isaiah 2 and Micah 4, which is the everlasting kingdom of the David, being raised up. Okay, and so it says the purification of Yahweh's true congregation, which is of the Jacob, and the separation of the tares from the wheat. So, folks, that event took place quietly out in the desert, 2002. The Adventist Church proper was not aware of anything going on. The Davidian world was not aware of anything going on, because they'd all rejected us of having anything for them. So this was just a quiet thing. Okay. Said to Yahshua, let both grow together until the harvest. The separation will mark the harvest. Note the verb until, meaning up to the most solemn time. For the one class, the Terry, and glorious, for the other 144,000, thrust out the section represented by the Jacob and forwards the other. Now we know that in the top, Yahweh thrust out the Esauites, and he forwarded Jacob. Okay, let's see what happens here. New Testament section number 3. Said to Yahshua, in the time of the harvest, I will say unto the reapers, gather ye together first the tares, and bind them in the bundles to burn them. Now I have some new light here for you. When you close out the 11th parabolic hour, that was not the beginning of the harvest, when you start gathering of the first fruits, 144,000. That was the wrapping up and closing out the judgment of the dead with the 11th hour people, and ushering in the 12th hour, and then setting up the tabernacle of David. You got to set the tabernacle of David up again. You got to restore all divine institutions. And that's in the 12th hour. You got to get that all restored. You got to get that sanctuary put back into full operation and restored. And then you start the harvest in the 12th hour. For the tares, therefore, are gathered just prior unto the harvest. Okay? That's Ezekiel 9. Okay? All the tares weren't gathered in 2002 when we came to a close down there. That was only a symbol of Yahweh separating the wheat from the tares. The Jacobites, Elijah David, represents the 144,000. And the Esauites represented the tares. That was just the beginning. Then that was the authority for then starting at the 12th hour and starting this work, because the separation of the tares from the wheat takes place in the 12th hour, not the 11th parabolic hour. Okay, so the time of the tares therefore are gathered just prior unto the harvest. Okay, so that's in the 12th parabolic hour, and burning the time of the harvest. Okay, they're gathered before the harvest, and then they're burned in the time of the harvest. Well, apparently then you have the executive judgment carried out on them. So else, how can Yahweh show the whole world who his people are? Yahshua says in Matthew 25:31-32, he gathers all nations before him. He puts the sheep on the right hand and the goats on the left. Well, that's the separation before the nations. And they see it. They see the good. They see the sheep on the right side of Yahshua, and they see the goats on the left side. And those goats, and that's the harvesting. When Yahshua sets the sheep on the right side, that's harvesting. Well, at the same time, he's setting the goats on the left side. That's in the time of harvest. Okay. So now, then you destroy the goats in the time of harvest. You put the wheat into the barn, which is represented by the sheep, at the same time. The sheep go one way, they go into the kingdom, they go into the barn, and the goats go into outer darkness and the eternal perdition and destruction. That's what Mark talks about there in Revelation 19, that the beast and the false prophet were both taken alive and cast into a lake of fire. That's here in the 12th hour. And it says, and those that they had deceived and caused to take the mark as well are also cast into the lake of fire. Now, do you understand what it says? The tares are bound in bundles to be burned, literally to be burned, into the lake of fire here in this 12th hour. You can read about it. And that lake of fire is your type for the lake of fire at the end of the millennium. For the tares, therefore, are gathered just prior unto the harvest in the 12th hour, and burned in the time of the harvest in the 12th hour. For note, the preposition in only gather the wheat into my barn, Matthew 13:30. For the wheat represents 144,000. The barn is a symbol of the security. For this glorious company is saved and protected, for the Satan cannot harm them. They are to be translated without seeing death. John describes them as being the first fruits of the harvest, unto the Elohim and the Lamb. The tares are taken away by the five men with the slaughter weapons of Ezekiel's vision. This is the event that makes the chain and brings about the Elohim's true congregation in the last probationary section, parentheses, Israel. Now, Israel gets the new name for the first time. Purified congregation gets restored unto them. The name that was restored unto Jacob when he wrestled with the angel all night, no more to be called Jacob. His name is Israel. So likewise, when we overcome and get the name changed, we will also get the same name, as shown on the chart. For it was Jacob, the father of the 12 tribes, whose name was changed unto Israel. For the Jacob's new name is a fitting symbol of the section entitled Israel. Thus again, would type meet antitype. So when the purified church comes again today, kingdom of David, then it's called the kingdom of Israel. Israel being a name also for David. In other words, I can be identified as David Israel, and you can be identified by the name, your biblical name you're going by, and you can add Israel on the end of it. It was Jacob who in the night, on the way to Paddan Aram, had the dream of the great ladder which reached from earth unto heaven. And the angels of the Elohim ascended and descended upon it. For this vision was a representation of the latter rain and the loud cry of the third angel's message in the time of the harvest. For the latter, representing Yahshua, the angels, with the messengers, with the Yahshua, the son, at the top of the ladder at the one end, and Jacob at the other, meaning a complete connection with heaven and earth. For that ladder, as I told you earlier, represents Yahshua reaching into heaven. So who would be at the top of that ladder then? It would be Yahshua. Though the duration of this last section of the probationary time entitled Israel is shorter than any of the periods before it. It is to be the most glorious time of the Elohim's congregation. For the prophet Isaiah, looking forward unto this time, says, "Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. For henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean." Never before this time in view has Elohim's congregation kept entirely free from the unconsecrated and unconverted terror, uncircumcised and unclean, in the midst of her. But now the time has come where he must purify his congregation and keep her as such. Zephaniah, referring unto this time, said, "For the remnant of Israel shall not do iniquity nor speak lies." Zephaniah 3:13. During this time of the harvest, the loud cry, the third angel's message shall penetrate unto the remotest parts of the sin-cursed world. For the John pointed unto this glorious harvest of the end-getting said, "I beheld and lo, a great multitude which no man could number, of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with a white robe and palms in their hand." Revelation 7:9. Elohim will finish the work and cut it short in the righteousness. Romans 9:28. Thus Elohim's congregation will be made ready to meet the Yahshua. Isaiah, looking forward unto this congregation, reflecting the divine, says, "Thou shalt also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Yahshua, and a royal diadem in the hand of thy Savior." Isaiah 62:3. Glorious is the Elohim's congregation in the day of the Yahshua, his son. John, after seeing in the vision the finishing work of the congregation, close of the probation, and the judgments of the Elohim and the seven last plagues, said, "And I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them." Revelation 20:11. Now, I'm going to reread this again. We have some new light right here that we need to reflect on. For the John, after seeing in the vision the finishing work of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in 2002, closing out the judgment of the dead with the Rhodes W. Johnson at the helm as the angel of the seventh candlestick, let us see. John saw all this. That was a close of probation for the Adventist Church, for Gilead Center, for Mount Carmel, and for Mount Bashan, the three feeding pastures for the Adventist. That all came to a close in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. And I'm going to read to you now what Sister White says about that same event. Now, I would like to say that every prophet that is put in charge of the candlestick, they have one duty, first and foremost, and that is duty to reprove sin. Call it back right now. So I'm going to read to you from Sister White on Volume 3 of her testimony, starting on page 265, with the subtitle, "Duty to Reprove Sin." I have been shown that Elohim here illustrates how he regards sin among those who profess to be his commandment-keeping people. Those whom he has specially honored with witnessing the remarkable exhibitions of his power, as did the ancient Israel, and who will even then venture to disregard his express directions, will be the subjects of his wrath. He would teach his people that disobedience and sin are exceedingly offensive unto him and are not to be lightly regarded. He shows us that when his people are found in sin, they should at once take decided measures to put that sin from them, that his frown may not rest upon them all. Okay? But if the sins of the people are passed over by those in the responsible positions, as it was at Kermit, for 33 long years, his frown will be upon them, and the people of Elohim as a body will be held responsible for those sins. In his dealings with his people, In the past, Yahweh showed the necessity of purifying the church from wrongs. So that's what happened down in Kermit 2002. He just purified the church at Gilead Center from wrongs. That was the beginning of the setting up the restoring the sanctuary and the tabernacle of David, and start getting everything restored. You got to get the temple and everything restored and put in operation before you can start righting the wrongs in of the world. One sinner may diffuse darkness that would exclude the light of Elohim from the entire congregation. When the people realize that that darkness is sitting up on them and they do not know the cause, they should seek Elohim earnestly in the great humility and self-abasement until the wrongs which grieve his spirit are searched out and put away. Well, I know one thing. There were two groups in the Gilead Center. There was always a one going to the other telling them, you know, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. For the prejudice which has arisen against us because we have reproved the wrongs that Elohim has shown me existed, and the crime that has been raised of the harshness and severity are unjust. Elohim bids us speak, and we will not be silent. If wrongs are apparent among the people, and if the servants of Elohim pass on indifferent under them, they virtually sustain and justify the sinner, and are alike guilty, and will just as surely receive the displeasure of the Yahweh, for they will be made responsible for the sins of the guilty. In the vision, I have been pointed to many instances where the displeasure of the Elohim has been incurred by a neglect on the part of his servants to deal with the wrongs and sins existing among them. Those who have excuse of these wrongs have been thought by the people to be very amiable and lovely in the disposition, simply because they shunned to discharge a plain scriptural duty for the task that was not agreeable under their feeling, therefore they avoided it. For the spirit of the hatred which has existed with some because of the wrongs among Elohim's people have been reproved, has brought blindness and a fearful deception upon their own soul, making it impossible for them to discriminate between right and wrong. They have put out their own spiritual eyesight. They may witness wrongs, but they do not feel as did Joshua and humble themselves because the daughter of souls is felt by them. Talking about the Joshua, actually, of Zechariah 3, the son of Joseph. But he was one called to be the king and priest upon the throne, and he was told that he had to get rid of his filthy garments first, and Yahshua was there to help do that, and that was at the judgment. Okay. So the true people of Elohim who have the spirit of the work of the Yahweh and the salvation of the souls and hearts will ever view sin as real, a sinful character. They will always be on the side of the faithful and plain dealing with sins which easily beset the people of Elohim, especially in the closing work for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. In the sealing time of the 144,000. There you are, that's right. She saw this herself. John the Revelator saw it. He talked about the closing work for the church, but he thought it'd be at the end of time, period. At the end of the 12th hour. I'm sure that's what he essentially probably thought. I don't know. Who are to stand without fault before the throne of Elohim? Well, they feel most deeply the wrongs of Elohim's professed people. This is forcibly set forth by the prophet's illustration of the last work under the figure of each of the men, each having a slaughter weapon in his hand. One man among them was clothed with the linen, with a rod of acorn by his side. And Yahweh said unto him, Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men, a sign that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. Who are standing in the council of the Elohim at this time? Is it those who virtually excuse wrongs among the professed people of the Elohim, and who murmur in their hearts, if not openly, against those who would reprove sin? Is it those who take their stand against them and sympathize with those who commit wrong? No, indeed. Unless they repent and leave this work of the Satan and the oppression, those who have the burden of the work, and in holding up the hands of the sinners in Zion, they will never receive the mark of the Elohim's seal and approval. They will fall in the general destruction of the wicked, represented by the work of the five men bearing a slaughter weapon. Mark this point with care. Those who receive the pure mark of the truth, brought in them by the power of the Holy Spirit, represented by a mark by the man in linen, are those that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that begun in the Seventh-day Adventist congregation. Their love for the purity and the honor of the glory of the Elohim is such, and they have so clear a view of the exceeding sinfulness of sin, that they are represented as being in agony, even sighing and crying. Read the 9th chapter of the Ezekiel. Okay. I thought maybe that needed to be done for everybody to be refreshed. And the fact that John the Revelator says about the same thing, Ellen G. White puts a new emphasis on it. Let's go now back to page 229 of the Shepherd Rod, volume 1, and let's deal with the Old Testament, section 1, Melchizedek, King of Salem. For the first main section in the chart entitled Melchizedek, we had reserved for the explanation until now. Note the following two main sections entitled Hagar and Sarah are the sections of the church history with earthly parentage, the first being after the flesh and the second after the spirit. Therefore, Hagar and Sarah are fitting symbols for these two main sections with Abraham as the father. These two sections, Hagar and Sarah, are unlike the first Melchizedek, king of Salem, which has none of these symbolical terms. It is a section of church history without earthly symbolical parentage. In order to meet the divine standard of the profession, both in the symbols as well as in the figures for the entire history of the Elohim's congregation, he must provide a fitting symbol for this particular section, as he has provided for the two succeeding sections. Whatever that symbol is, it must be the kind to indicate church history without the earthly parentage. Paul gives us information of the fitting symbol for this section in Hebrews 7:1-3. For this Melchizedek, king of the Salem, priest of the Most High Elohim, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the king, and blessed him, unto whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being by the interpretation king of the righteousness, and after that also king of the Salem, which is the king of the peace, without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the son of Elohim, abideth a priest continually. Though we mortals cannot comprehend the existence of this man Melchizedek, king of the Salem, it must be true that he is without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor any of life, thus making a perfect fitting symbol of that section of the Elohim's church. Again, we see Elohim's profession in the perfect symbols for the entire history of the church. As soon as sin entered in the beginning with the parents of the human family, and before they were driven out from their Eden home, the plans already devised for the return unto their original home of the eternal abode were made known unto them, as well as unto the serpent. Now these preordained plans of the Elohim are better understood by the studying his wonderful divine dealings with the human family onward through the ages as pictured in this chart. While Elohim has carried out his predestined plan without the variation even unto the minutest of the detail, said the Yeshua, these are the words which I spake unto you while I was yet with you, that all things must be fulfilled which were written in the law of Moses, and in the prophets, and in the Psalms concerning me. Luke 24:44. For the Spirit of the Yahweh, the Father, led the psalmist to inscribe the word. For the Yahweh shall send the rod of thy strength. And I didn't say the rod of his strength. He says the rod of thy strength. Rod means the authority for Yahweh's government, for one thing. It's the same. It means the same thing as a scepter, the shepherd's rod, out of Zion. Okay, out of Zion in Jerusalem, not Mount Sinai in Saudi Arabia, where Moses first brought the children of Israel and the Ishmaelites that caused the apostasy of the Hebrews there at Kadesh Barnea. Rule thou in the midst of thine enemies, for the Yahweh has sworn and will not repent. Thou art a priest forever, talking about his son, after the order of Melchizedek, Psalms 110:2-4. Okay. Though we cannot comprehend such infinite wisdom, it gives us better understanding of the Elohim's love for the sinners and our misconception of the so-called human knowledge of the thing until the eternal I Am who inhabits eternity, before whom the darkness is light and the remotest boundaries in space his footstool, who sees the end from the beginning, and unto whom 1,000 years are but as yesterday. All things are open and naked unto him. Said the psalmist, whither shall I go from thy spirit? Or whither shall I flee from thy presence? I ascend up into the heaven, thou art there. I make my bed in the hell, behold, thou art there. I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea. Even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. For the darkness and the light are both alike unto thee. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it. Psalms 139:7-12, verse 6. For the wisdom and knowledge of the infinite is beyond comprehension by the finite. For the wonders we behold and the events which make the history of our world are but duplicates from the blueprints in the heavens. How the checkup contents presented if all things. Let's go into that. Which of you intended to build a tower, sitteth not down first, and counteth the cost, whether he hath sufficient to finish it, lest happily after he hath laid the foundation, and is not able to finish it, all that behold it began to mock him. Luke 14:28-29. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what happened with all of the steps of the genuine movement of the Advent, when last ones bring each feeding pasture to a close and in charge of feeding pasture, then they didn't have enough finances, or they didn't have enough material to finish the job that was started in each one of those feeding pastures. As the Elohim is infallible, all his works spell perfection, even into the one jot or one tittle. The statement being true, he should have provided a way whereby we may check up and ascertain his truth. The chart on page 224 being the summary of the message for this publication bears, should be able to tell whether it proves correct or not. If its contents prove 100% true, we must accept it as the Elohim's truth. By all the Bible students, numbers 3 and 7 are accepted to be the biblical numbers to ascertain scriptural truth, for the spirit of the prophecy bears witness unto this as well as the Bible. For there are three that bear record in heaven, the Father, the Word, and the Holy Spirit. And there are three, and these three are one. And there are three that bear witness in the earth, the spirit, and the water, and the blood. And these three agree in one, 1 John 5, 7, and 8. In the revelation given unto him, there was unfolded scene after scene of the thrilling interest in the experience of the people of Elohim, and the history of the church was foretold to the very close of the time. And the figures and symbols, subjects, and vast importance were presented unto John, which he was to record, that the people of Elohim living in his age and in the future ages might have intelligent understanding of the peril and conflicts before them. Acts of the Apostles, page 583. This being so, we shall aptly apply the test on the contents of this book as pictured in the chart. Note that there are three main sections in the summary chart, namely, number one, Melchizedek, the priest of the Most High Elohim, number two, Hagar, and number three, Sarah. Number one, Melchizedek, priest of the Most High, okay, and number two, the Levitical priesthood, and number three, the priesthood after the order of Melchizedek. Therefore, one priesthood links with another. Now count the subsections of the probationary time, and both before the cross and after. In each division, we have three subsections. Again, count all the sections in both before and after the cross, including the plagues, and we have the number seven, meaning the end of the world. Permit us to call your attention at this third time unto the types. Number one, the parent types, namely Abraham, the father, Hagar, and Sarah, the mother, making the number three. Number two, the children Ishmael, Isaac, and Jacob, making the number three. And number three, Jacob's name changed to Israel. Hagar and Ishmael sent away again, making it the number three. There is a fourth line of figures to call your attention to. The name of Abraham contains seven letters, meaning complete, or a father for the entire future history of the church. Ishmael also has seven letters, meaning finished, ended, meaning he is through. There are none of his descendants to succeed him. This brings us to the end of this hour. Contact us the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. We're going to close this service now with a song entitled "Remind Me, Dear Yahweh." The things that I love and hold dear in my heart are just borrowed. They're not mine at all. Just only let me do some to brighten my life. So remind me, dear young. Roll back the curtain of memory now and then. Show me where you brought me from and where I could have been. Remember, I'm human, and human forget. So remind me, dear John. Nothing good have I done to deserve your own son. I'm not worthy of the scars in his hand. Then he chose the road to Calvary to die in my stead. Why he loved me, I can't understand. Roll back the curtain of memory now and then. Show me where you brought me from and where I could have been. remember how humans and humans forget. So remind me, dear Lord.